Two automakers, one troubled leader, two different responses. In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. Nissan's board of directors has voted unanimously to oust Carlos Ghosn as its chairman after he was arrested in Japan Monday for allegedly underreporting his income. Nissan's approach is more aggressive than the path chosen by French automaker Renault, which Ghosn also led. It opted to appoint a chairman, an interim chairman, just while Ghosn is temporarily incapacitated. Together with Mitsubishi, the three companies are part of a unique alliance, which together makes them one of the world's largest automakers. Here to discuss is Theo Leggett, international business correspondent at the BBC. Hey, Theo.
Hey, Tracy.
So what do you think explains this divide, this difference in approach between Nissan and Renault?
Well, Renault and Nissan are two very different companies that were brought together really as a matter of convenience, but they still have their own identities. So although Nissan says it had to get rid of Carlos Ghosn because of these allegations of wrongdoing, talk to insiders, particularly on the Renault side, and they say, well, actually, Carlos Ghosn was trying to bring these companies closer together, and that may have set off some fears at Nissan. So they took the opportunity, so the allegation goes, to launch something of a palace coup.
A palace coup. How much credence do you give those claims?
Observers of Japanese corporate culture will tell you that there were certain misgivings about Renault's increased involvement in the alliance. So you have to factor in the contents of that extraordinary press conference earlier this week when Mr. Saikawa, the current chief executive of Nissan, took the opportunity to explain what the allegations were against Mr. Ghosn, but rather than leaving it at that, went on at some length to talk about how too much power had been concentrated in the hands of one man and how the way that the company was run in future would have to be different. So I think if you get all of that together, the idea that perhaps a situation has emerged that people, certain executives within Nissan have taken advantage of, is at the very least credible.
And so with Ghosn's arrest, do we know anything more about the state of the alliance between those three automakers?
Well, I've been talking to people within the alliance this morning, and the question then becomes, who's going to lead the alliance? Now, people within the alliance are saying, you know, it's not going to go away. It is too big, too complex. The amounts of money are too great for it to start to fall apart. At the moment, the man who has been giving it guidance and strategic direction is under arrest in Tokyo. So people are still trying to work out what is going to happen next.
Okay, the BBC's Theo Leggett. Thanks, Theo.
Thank you.
Pretty much as long as there's been commerce and trade, there have been smugglers and illegal traders. But according to a new book, the scale and consequences of illicit trade are now much higher. Over the last three decades, globalization and new technology have fueled the exponential growth of illegal trade. Smuggled goods include drugs, endangered species, people, looted antiquities that fund terrorist armies. Louise Shelley is a professor at George Mason University and author of Dark Commerce, How a New Illicit Economy is Threatening Our Future. Hey, Professor Shelley.
Hello.
Where smugglers were maybe once trading black market tobacco and textiles, those routes are still in existence now, but with different products?
Very much so. So, for example, the old smuggling routes of the Ottoman Empire between North Africa and Europe are now not being used just for goods, but are key routes for the smuggling of people.
So if these routes are so well established, why is it so hard to crack down on the smuggling?
Because the scale is now so massive. And often the illicit travels with the illicit. And so much of it is being ordered online, and the direction and the supply chain messages are going through new social media that people cannot track and find these illicit shipments. So it's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
So it's hard to track the physical goods, but if there are digital forums where buyers and sellers meet, why is it so hard to shut them down?
We have legislation that does not make platforms and social media responsible for what they are communicating. So just as we've had an explosion of fake news that has been so hard to shut down, the same thing is going on in illicit trade.
You know, for the average person, they're, you know, the only contact they might have with this kind of illegal trade would be buying a counterfeit jersey or a handbag. Why does this matter?
People have much more contact than they realize. Every cell phone that they purchase, every computer that they use has coltan, and much of that is illegally obtained and part of an illegal supply chain. So this is much more part of our lives because trafficked labor is responsible for many of the things that we use in our daily lives. But what the end consequence of this illegal trade in trees, in fish, in water, in environmental product is that we're leading to a planet that is becoming less sustainable. And as the world's population continues to grow, we may not be sustainable on this planet. And as I conclude the book, there are no jobs on a dead planet.
Louise Shelley is author of the new book, Dark Commerce. Thanks, Louise.
Thank you.
And in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.